What do you think are the things, or were the things that were especially well done in the Ford White House, and what things, if any, were not so so well done? Don, would you be willing to start us off?
Well, maybe the way to start is to just comment briefly on what I think it's probably accurate to say President Ford was trying to do. Then one can, I suppose, ask the question whether or not that's what he ought to have been trying to do and how well he did it. But the sense he had, and the sense that I think a number of the people in this room who were around him had, was that the problem he faced was one of trying to do basically two things at once. One was to provide a degree of continuity as the first president who wasn't elected and came in abruptly, and to keep, to see that the government ran, that there was a degree of continuity, that things worked, particularly important in foreign policy and national security affairs. And you can detect in the things he did a reflection of that concern, that the United States be seen as a country that people had a reasonable idea which way they were going internationally and from a security standpoint. At the same time, he recognized the need for change. First of all, there had been a change. There was a new president. Second, there was a need in the country for something other than what had been there as a result of the resignation. The third, there obviously was it, he felt, a need for a sense of change because of the problem that a president has leading, and the fact that for the preceding period, the preoccupation really had been with Watergate as opposed to governing. And as the ambassador indicated, a desire to do those things that might contribute, along with the most important ingredient of time, to restoring the executive office of the president to a position of sufficient respect and trust that a leader who has to lead by persuasion and consent is able to function. And furthermore, from a political standpoint, obviously, the elections that were associated with the Watergate period were not helpful to the Republican Party, and as a political leader, it was desirable to have sufficient change that the prospects in the prospective elections would hopefully be better. It seems to me that is at least what I recall to be some of the things that he was thinking about and the people around him were thinking about, trying to do during that period. And of course that period wouldn't last for the entire time he was there, but it was an important part of his entire administration, given the fact that it was relatively short.
How did those concerns manifest themselves in operations or organization or behavior in the...
Well, just one example, one of the first things he did, even I was not in the country, but my recollection, even before he was sworn in, he indicated his support for Henry Kissinger, his desire to have the world understand that he knew him, that they were in general agreement that he was going to stay, and that the rest of the world could rely on a degree of continuity from the standpoint of foreign policy, as an example of something he did. I don't remember when he did it, but he had done it by the time I landed back in the United States.
Well, one of his very first acts on Inauguration Day was to call in the ambassadors of virtually every country with whom we had substantial relations and talked with them. he spent a good part of the first day doing that in batches for some singly with others.
Maybe the key point here, I think, in terms of the transition, I can't overemphasize strongly enough in my own mind how important it is to separate out that kind of transition from a, even though it's within one party, Republican to Republican, it was unique, respective to Kennedy to Johnson or someone else. It's whereas LBJ was perfectly free when he took over, and indeed all of the external pressure, so to speak, on him were to stress continuity, that he'd ask everybody to continue, and that to some extent his own political future in 1964 depended upon the ability of him to identify with his predecessor. We had exactly the opposite situation. While there was great pressure for continuity in foreign policy, there was much greater pressure, not relative to the pressure for continuity, but greater pressure relative to what a new president would ordinarily find coming into office in that fashion, for change, to be able to persuade the American people that we had significantly modified and altered the way of doing business in the White House, who the key people were, made some changes in the cabinet and so forth. The kinds of pressures that LBJ, for example, never had to face. And I think that dominated, not dominated perhaps, it was a factor for 2.5 years all the time over there.
There's another element to the 25th Amendment point that that Jack raised, and that is the character of events which led to it. In many respects, you know, the transition was not that different in the fact of a new president assuming office in a very sudden manner to the Kennedy-Johnson. The circumstances were very different. The assassination of Kennedy brought the country together. It was an enormous outwelling of support and national unity. Quite the converse was true. When President Ford took over, he took over in circumstances of deep division within the country. And the circumstances of the resignation led him to take an act very shortly thereafter, the pardon, to deal with those circumstances, which I think, you know, pretty nearly ended what you, the traditional honeymoon of a new president and giving him time, because, you know, this mobilized the press and it focused attention on him and in a critical way, which didn't happen with Johnson.